Welcome to the SMB Community Podcast with hosts Amy Babinchek, James Kernan, and Carl Polacek. Produced by Kernan Consulting and for the international MSP community, we are dedicated to making every IT professional a successful IT professional. Hey, welcome to the SMB Community Podcast. This is James Kernan with Kernan Consulting, back with my good friend Amy Babinchek. Hey, Amy, good morning.
Good morning, James. Happy to be here.
Yeah, awesome, awesome. Happy Monday. Ready for another fun week in the Midwest. Hopefully it's not too hot up there.
You know, I always call it Canada's come to visit. And I was shocked this morning when I opened my eyes and I have one of those little stands for my cell phone that turns it sideways. So it turns into a nightstand clock.
Yeah. Nice.
Which is a really cool feature. If you don't know about it, it makes everything red. So it doesn't ruin your night vision. And then, I just have it displaying the clock and the temperature. It's motion sensitive too, so it goes black if you're not moving around. So it's kind of cool. Anyway, it's a temperature this morning. I woke up, it said 57.
Really?
It's like, I was like, whoa, you got to be kidding me. So yeah, yesterday Canada came to visit. We had a whole bunch of north wind coming down and
good for you.
It dropped, so it was nice. It was actually in the 70s during the day, which we haven't seen in a while. So it's a nice break.
Good for you. I hope that those winds continue to push the cool weather further south. I don't think we're going to cool off till later this week. I think when I woke early this morning, it was 75 out. So it's already too.
Yep, that's how our weather has been till now. So I'm glad for the break.
So hey, we've got a full lineup of things to chat about. The MSP question of the week. Let's start there. I thought this was really interesting question that came in, but it says, How do I attract L3, L4, level 3, level 4 technical talent for hire? So it sounds like he's looking for, we got an MSP business owner reached out and he was looking to hire a top level engineer.
Yeah, James, I hope that this MSP is 20 million or above. Because really, otherwise, I don't think you can afford it.
Yeah.
So before we even think about how do I attract them, you got to think about how do you bill for them?
Mm-hmm.
And how much billing do you really have at that level?
Yeah.
Right. When you hire that level 3, level 4 person, they are not a broad based skill person. Mm-hmm. Like your ones and twos are, right? Your ones and twos can know a little bit about a whole lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Your level 3, level 4, which I'm not even sure there is a level 4, but whatever. They know a lot about one thing. And so they're going to be, they're going to be very good at virtual machines. They're going to be very good at SharePoint. They're going to be very good at, firewalls, something.
Right.
But their skill is going to be very specific and very expensive. So you really have to look at your needs and say, how many hours do I actually have a need for?
Yeah, I really like what you said. You first need to think about how are you going to bill them out? Because a lot of people don't realize the, level 3, level 4, obviously very expensive. That's what you've pointed out. But those people should be billed out $225 an hour or more. $250 an hour, $300 an hour. And does your current customer base, would they support that? Or are you just trying to, it sounds to me like this person has some level 1, level 2 technical people and tickets keep escalating to him. Now he's blown out and he can't, owner operator, he does everything. He can't keep up. So he wants to hire another senior engineer, probably better than him. What I would say too is look at outsourcing someone. And I remember when I was running my MSP and we started getting some big accounts and big projects. We couldn't afford one. I didn't want to afford one because I don't know if I had enough work to keep them busy. But those specialists that you're talking about, they are expensive, but we just turned right around and we hired them by the hour on 1099. So we just subcontracted people. We had good agreements, subcontractor agreements in place. They would never send a friendly competitor out to any of my customers without some kind of written agreement on the do's and don'ts. So I think that's important. But that's how we did it. We just kind of subcontracted people until we had enough work. Then I could start hiring people. And then that first one was terrifying, but we just continued to grow. And then we could afford people like that.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to be a quite large company to be able to afford that and build that out, like you said, because the volume of work for those people on that particular skill set is really pretty low in an MSP, and it should be.
Yeah.
So really, really look at that hard. The better way to go is to develop those relationships, right? Develop them with your friendly competitors. Go online, right? Go into LinkedIn. There are tons of guns for hire that are those high-level employees that have decided to go out on their own, right? And they're just looking for that next few hours of billing, right?
Right.
They're billing out their services direct at $300 an hour.
Yep.
And you know, you can hire them and have them do a job for an hour or 5 hours or whatever it is their need. They're going to be able to do it very efficiently for you.
Yeah.
But you need to I would put the money in time into developing those relationships way before I would consider hiring somebody.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. And that, and when you're in growth mode, if that's your goal to continue to grow organically, you know, you're going to need to find those people and develop those relationships, people that you can trust and put out mm-hmm. there in front of your clients and, you know, to help bridge the gap until you can, afford to hire them. So that's what I would look at. The other thing that I would say is, you know, this is a hard question, but I would always encourage people when they're getting ready to hire any employee, just ask yourself the simple question, would you work there? Would you want to go work there? What would attract you to go work there? Is it the culture? Is it the training opportunities? Is it the client base are fun, you know, and unique? You know, what are they going to learn? How are they going to grow as a person? You know, is it a fun office environment? You know, would that be something that you would be attracted to? And most of the time when I ask that question, the answer is no. Unfortunately, it's like, no, I don't think I would want to work there. I go, why? You know, well, how are we, you know, we're never going to be able to attract great people unless we change that. So
right.
there's a lot that goes into that. But, anyway, I just wanted to pose that question out there too. And, you know, figure out what you need to do to become more attractive, to, you know, get these top people.
Yeah. It's not just about money.
Right. Exactly. So awesome. Well, there's a lot out in the news. You know, something that caught my eye, I saw this out on LinkedIn. Our good friend Jay McBain had an article, and then I think I saw a couple other people posted on social media. But he had posted this past week an article about the list of millionaires around the world. And I know you saw that too. Mm-hmm. Did you get a chance to read through that?
I did. And I think I even commented on it as well. And it, of course, you know, the USA, the land of opportunity, we're at the top of the list of millionaires. We're also really at the top of the list of people who pay a lot for housing too.
Right.
So we do have to temper those numbers a little bit with the reality of what our housing market looks like, because a lot of personal wealth is tied up in housing, and it's a problem because it's not liquid. You can't spend it. You can't use it for your needs. You still have to have that roof over your head.
Right.
So A lot of people like to count their house in their net worth, and I don't, because I know I still have to have one.
Right.
I can't spend my house. And very few people, you know, some people say like, oh, well, you know, I'm going to, you know, after my retirement, I'm going to cash this house in. I'm going to go live in a smaller, less expensive home.
Mm-hmm.
Almost nobody actually does that, though, from what I've read in the statistics in some other articles, that people aren't willing to go back and live in that neighborhood that they started out in as a newlywed.
Right. Right.
Where the smaller, less expensive houses are located. And so the smaller house is probably just as nearly as expensive because you have certain expectations for the neighborhood you want to live in now.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to transition a home into cash.
Well, I know firsthand, you know, I lived in California for 25 years, and some of the biggest investment gains, capital gains I've ever achieved were, you know, being involved in, you know, personal property or commercial properties out there. And I think that's where a lot of the millionaires come from. What stood out to me was that, again, back to your comment of the land of opportunity, the United States had 10x more millionaires than anybody else on the list. China was second, followed by Germany, Japan, and then the UK. And then beneath that, there were lots of European countries. And that's probably no surprise, but it had 5x more multimillionaires and 4x more billionaires than any other country. So,
James, do you know if that was adjusted for population? That occurs to me just now. But because if I think about 24 million millionaires by net worth in the United States, including real estate holdings, that's less than 10% of our population.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take your house out of the picture, it's probably...
Yeah, it's got to cut that.
Probably a third to a half of that million-dollar number. So...
Thinking the same thing.
I'd like to see us have more than... That's not even 10%.
Yeah.
I'd like to see us have more than that.
But you know what's interesting, though, is, you know, I'm going to age myself a little bit, but think back when we were kids, you know, how many millionaires were there at that time? It was very rare. You know, now it seems, you know, almost one in 10 are millionaires. And again, I think it has a lot to do with the, you know, personal properties. But, you know, I think the median home price out in California is almost $1 million. So
the East Coast, West Coast has crazy house prices.
Yeah.
Up here in the North Coast, we're pretty reasonable, but still it's gone up a lot. You know, you're talking about, you know, growing up as a kid and there not being very many millionaires. I remember my dad saying to me that in 1960, he made $10,000 and he was a wealthy man at that time. That was a big time salary for 1960.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, inflation and, you know, wage increases, our standards of living have gone up tremendously, you know.
Yep.
Not a one car family, it's a two car family. It's, you know, it's not a one bathroom house, it's a four bathroom house.
Right.
Yeah. Everybody's standard of living has gone up too. So even if you haven't hit that $1 million mark, it's not all bad news. Your standard of living is still higher than almost anywhere else in the world.
And we've had some really interesting guests. I mean, you know, to me, you know, getting to be a millionaire is kind of easy now, but keeping that money and then growing your net worth, that's where the trick comes in. We've had some very interesting guests on the podcast here about, you know, creating that legacy and retaining and growing your net worth. And it doesn't all have to do with properties. There's a lot of other things that you could or should be doing. So you should check those out too.
You know, James, we say it's easy. And I agree with you. You know, it should be easy if you follow. There's a well-trod path to follow. Mm-hmm. But yet, less than 10% of people have made it there in the United States. So while we're number one, we know there's a path for everybody to get there, but not everybody's on that path.
Yeah, true, true, true. Yep. It, I'm sure that number will continue to grow. So we'll see where that is, see where that is. So there's a couple other things I thought were really interesting, and you'll appreciate this. It kind of links back to the question of the week. LinkedIn had an interesting article about job interviews are going old school. So what the article was about was, you know, really when COVID hit, everything went virtual, and that had become the norm. So all these job interviews, people were showing up to job interviews, some of them not even on their camera, but it was all remote, you know, over the phone, over video meetings, and their camera was off. And now there's so many AI tools that people were using, you know, big companies like Google, Cisco, they're all requiring face-to-face meetings now for any candidate before you hire them. I don't know about you. I couldn't imagine hiring someone to work in my organization without at least some kind of eyeball-to-eyeball contact, a video meeting, but preferably in person. How do you feel about that?
I guess, you know, I don't think of myself as an old school person in anything except this, I guess, because, you know, I always hire in person.
Yeah.
Always have, always did. Even you mentioned COVID, but even pre-COVID, I had job applicants, you know, wanting to balk at the in-person interview. Like, you know, well, this is where I'm going to be working from home. Why do I have to come in for the interview? Well, you know, you're also going to be communicating to my customers. You will probably be on site with my customers at some point. You know, I want to see you. And it did happen, you know, more than once that after I met somebody in person, you know, weird things about their appearance, their body language, their phrasing, you know, how they showed up to the meeting was like, yeah, it's not really how I want you to show up for my customers. I mean, this is how you're showing up for an interview, which you're probably on your really best behavior.
Right.
If this is your best, I don't want to hire you every day.
Yeah, I've talked about recruiting, you know, and it's certainly a needed skill. And what I thought was interesting is in one of the presentations I had done, there was an actual picture of a woman, and at the very first picture she had no makeup on, and then she went through. There were 10 photos that evolved from her being just a very basic, homely person to this picture of a supermodel. I mean, I can't even believe it's the same person, but it is. And my point was, you know, you can get yourself all dolled up and become anybody that you want to on your resume and during a job interview. And you're exactly right. People, you know, you know, put on their best behavior during those interviews, and because they want to get hired. So you know, you need to do lots of different things. I even like doing personality tests, have multiple people interview them, not just one person, some kind of you know, technical assessment if you can. But you know, I love those assessments when you get down to, hey, I'm going to look at hiring one of these three people, because some of those assessments can be pretty expensive, but I like doing it that way as well.
Yeah. I always liked interviewing with more than one person too. And also doing more than one interview. We always did a minimum of two.
Yeah.
And then the second interview is where I would bring in, you know, some of the other staff that they were going to be working with. So yeah, it's interview by peers. They're already in that job.
Right.
Just to see sort of, you know, what their impression of them was, and, you know, how they think they would fit in with the other folks that are here already and that kind of thing.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, here's something else that kind of flows into this same topic. There was a really interesting article to me in the Wall Street Journal, and it says, the headline was, more workers are getting job skill certificates, but rarely do they pay off. And in the article, they were really talking about there's thousands and thousands of these online courses. and credentials that people, you know, I see it every day on LinkedIn, you know, hey, you know, Jane Doe just, you know, has this new certificate. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, probably took them 15 minutes and they got a new credential added to their LinkedIn profile. But I think this goes deeper because there's, I like the idea of people, you know, getting training and certificates, but this article just said in this study, only 1 in 8 made any kind of change to their compensation, meaning, you know, those other 7 thing certificates or trainings that people went through did absolutely nothing on their salary. So just 1 in 8, you know, pay off. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. In the article, they talked about that the medical industry is the one that's doing the best on that. So if you want to take a certificate program and your goal is you're going to start to make more money tomorrow, the medical industry is your best shot. But we're not in the medical industry, we're in the IT industry.
Right.
Things change so rapidly in our industry. To me, these, you know, courses you take, the, you know, little mini certificates you might get for attending, you know, a class or something, that's just treading water.
Mm-hmm.
This is what you have to do to make sure you're still employable, that you still have a job, because, you know, you're a day old banana getting older on the counter if you're not constantly skilling up in IT. This is a job for people who like to learn.
So what was your philosophy at your MSP about certifications? Did you encourage your employees to go through training and get certifications, and was that important to you?
It was important to me, yes, and I did encourage them to get those certifications, and I did give them a one-time cash compensation for that achievement, and we celebrated it. So it wasn't a wage increase, but it was, you know, it was like a spiff bonus kind of thing. Yeah, something like that. Just to encourage people to continue to do it. And, you know, we did training together, group training twice a month as well. I wanted to always to develop that learning culture. And everybody had a plan of what they were learning, you know, what they were going to do these next 12 months. Like, what are you going to do? What class are you going to take? What, you know, what certificate are you going to gain? I didn't care whether they got the certificate or not. I wanted them to be in the class and learning.
Right.
And so they all had a plan for what they were going to do. Right. Because that was a huge part of our culture, was that.
Education and growth.
We know all the new stuff. I think this has to be a thing in our industry. You know, other industries, accounting industry, for example, right? They have to take continuing education credits. Lots of other industries do, in order to maintain their certification, their license to be in that business. I think in IT, we need to do the same. Yeah, NSITSP, the National Society for IT Service Providers, they're actually rolling out a program like that right now. They're currently underway certifying companies to provide continuing education credits. So it's something that's really, really needed in our industry. You know, is it going to get you, you know, like tomorrow, are you going to get a wage increase because you got the certificate? Probably not. But over the course of 5 years, over the course of your career, are you going to be a more valuable employee because you continued on the path of education and kept your skills up? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. I couldn't agree with you more. I've been in over my career, countless heated discussions with consultants and business owners about this topic, you know, and I frequently hear, oh, I'm not a good test taker, so it's not important. You know, I think it's a lot more important that we have real world experience and not these paper certificates. And I get what everybody is saying, but in my organizations, and I work for bigger, you know, some bigger companies, you know, in order to maintain you know, pricing discount levels, you know, MDF funds, you know, get reimbursed from your big strategic partners like Cisco or IBM or Microsoft. You know, you needed to get X amount of salespeople and X amount of engineers certified on a variety of things. So I think that's really important to what the company's goals are. I get what some people are saying. Maybe they aren't good test takers. And I have seen people that were MCSEs or CISSPs, and they had these big certificates, but they didn't have the worldly experience that you really need. You know, so I've run into that too. But like you, Amy, I always told my employees, hey, my job is to make you better. And we have personal development plans, and we expected people to go through trainings, certification trainings every quarter. And we offered spiffs and pay increases on different ones because we wanted to reward those people that were doing that as well. I think that's an important thing.
Yep. You mentioned the, you know, the paper MCSE, that was a thing for a while, and all the people with their CISSPs, and, you know, the folks that don't like to take exams, they're kind of derogatory about that and go, well, yeah, but I know more than they do because I have the real work experience. Well, to me, you need both. You are less valuable because you haven't taken the course, right? You don't have that certificate behind you, even though you have the experience.
Right.
Vice versa, the same way. So you've taken the course and got the certificate. Now you need to go out and get the experience. Yeah. That's how the world works. It's a combination of both. The thing you gain from taking the course is you get a more holistic view of why you're doing the things you're doing, rather than just, you know, having learned on the job. You may have learned how to do it, but you may not have the why behind you, and some of the theory is missing. So everybody's got to fill those gaps, and you fill those gaps by doing the whole thing, not just part of it.
Exactly. Exactly. Great. Well, hey, we'd love to hear from you and what your opinion is about certifications, yes or no, you know, what your culture, what your company does, if you feel that's important, you know, to get the training and certifications under your belt. So reach out anytime to james@kernanconsulting.com or hit us up on the website, smbcommunitypodcast.com. So, all right. Well, I think that's a wrap for what we had on the agenda for today. Amy, good to see you, and we'll see everybody back next week. Thank you for tuning in to the SMB Community Podcast. If you found this interesting or fun, please subscribe, share with your friends, and give us a thumbs up on your favorite social media. We would love to hear from you, so reach out anytime on the website at smbcommunitypodcast.com.